Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Farmer Sense Podcast. Andrew Fuff is our co-host. My name is Rick Willard. I'm your host.
Hi, Rick. How are you today?
I'm good, Andrew. How are you doing?
Good. I like our music. It's going up and down today for some reason. Right before we got on, your wife came and saw you in just a towel, is what you said. And so I'm like, I don't know what to say. Awkward silence from
at least she showers, right? Is that what you're thinking? You
yeah. I'm like, well, it's Friday morning, so I'm like, wow, it's way more interesting at your house than it is mine.
Yeah, well, she doesn't work today.
Yeah, I hear you. Good.
So we're going to do something a little different. We don't have a guest today. It's just going to be you and I talking, which is sometimes easier to do because a lot of times, like our last guest we had or we recorded for was Cassidy Million. From FICO Terra, and I was just having one of those days. I couldn't talk that day, so I just want everybody to know that sometimes
it's going to be more of a natural conversation today.
Yeah,
it's going to be talking about what we're doing on our farms, what we're kind of looking forward to this 2024 growing season, what we've done in the past, you know, and leading up to it. Maybe some expectations. I don't know. Are you having any goals out there that you want? Maybe we'll do that at the end. But
yeah, okay. I always have goals and expectations. And they always say if you set a goal and someone doesn't laugh at it, that you're not setting a high enough goal. So we can talk about them here in a little bit.
I think that's awesome. We'll hit that at the end. So.
Oh, okay.
Does that sound good? That'd be a good way to wrap it up so we can say, hey, these are our goals for the year. Hold us to them, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. These are our goals.
So. Yep. Obviously, Mother Nature has a lot to do with that. If we get some freak storm or whatever it might be, that's not always good. But
if it's not in your control, it's not in your control. So,
yeah. And also let it be known that we're not telling anybody what to do, why to do it. We're not promoting any products other than Web Western Wear. The hat I got on here. Yep. So if you want 10% off on any Web Western Wear, that's WEBB, use the Farmer Sense 10 code at checkout and you'll save 10%.
Yep. Excellent. Thanks for remembering that this time. I forgot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. You want to start off? You said when we were talking about doing this episode that I'm like, well, do you want to talk about something you did last fall? So I'll ask you, did you do any field work last fall, any tillage or anything like that?
Yeah, so strip tilling got done. I still used anhydrous, which I didn't want to have to use it. I did. I didn't get everything quite set up the way I wanted it to. I want to go to just 32%. I want to be able to apply it with my planter and Y drop. And I didn't get all that done. I mean, financially that comes into play also, help wise, you know, it's just me and my dad, which he has a lot of help, and most of the help I need during the spring is, you know, hauling me back and forth or around or, you know, bringing this or that. So not a huge issue, but, I mean, when you're putting fertilizer onto the planter, there's a lot of time taken. You know, you're not just filling up a seed in the morning and planting all day. You're constantly refilling. And I have saddle tanks for my tractor, but, you know, I wanted to kind of do something different as far as setup goes and don't always have time. I had a beautiful winter to work on stuff. Don't get me wrong, but there's a lot of other things going on too. So,
yep. All right. So you did your fall strips.
Yeah.
What's in your strip? Give me a rough breakdown.
Just anhydrous. So about 140 units of actual N, and that didn't vary this year. I just went straight across and our soils, the CECs are nothing's really, you know, below 15. So I stuck with that 140, figured I'd be safe. I used 2 gallons of HydraHume from Helena because I use their liquid fertilizer. Mm-hmm. So I had 2 gallons of the Hydrohume Humic, which helps stabilize the nitrogen. And also, obviously, it's good for your soil. But I didn't throw any micros in this year. Just I wanted to cut back. I didn't know what our spring is going to be. And so far, it looks like it's still going to be dry.
Yep.
And I wanted to be able to supplement any micros either with my planter or because I can still do in-furrow.
Yeah, and foliolators because you have wide drops.
Yeah, and then I was wide drops. Sorry. Definitely. Yep. And I can come in a little earlier. I usually try to hit wide drops at like 800 GDUs, and I can come in earlier just as long as the wide drops will follow the rows. I don't want it to be too short where it's breaking off or flopping over the corn rows or whatever. But
yep,
if I need to come out earlier, I will. So mm-hmm. that was kind of my fall program. Mm-hmm. So far, what about yours? Did you do any fall strips? Or?
Yep. So I do fall strips, soil warrior, Coulter machine. And so I put down my P and K. And after kind of this winter and hearing people talk, I'm beginning to think that wasn't the best idea. You know, I like the idea of getting out in the fall, but they're saying maybe that potassium isn't available in the spring early. And maybe I'm seeing some potassium. So it's tied up, especially in a corn-on-corn in a higher residue rotation instead of an alternating. But it was basically a 0-40-60 is what I put on in the fall. And I went across every acre. And a couple farms, I put my zinc, my sulfur, and my nitrogen. I put on about 115 to 120 pounds. And that's a 60-40 blend of ESN. And I did some treated urea last fall. I will never do that again through the strip till machine. That was a learning experience.
Gummed up, didn't you?
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So now we've moved to spring. That's all I do. That's all I did for tillage. I offset my row 15 inches on RTK and hit in between the corn rows. So then spring strips, I did another pass on some of the fields. I'm trying something different. I put my P and K down last fall on some of it. And then I'm coming back and I'm hitting that same strip this spring. And I'm putting 100 pounds of 60-40 urea and ESN, heavy ESN, so that I have the urea there available early to the plant. You know, after planting, and hopefully the ESN will carry me till I top dress at, you know, V4, V5. I know you use GDUs. I'm still learning that. Stages the GDUs. I mean, I understand why you do it. I just mentally, I haven't had those numbers ingrained into me to say, oh, it's at 600 GDUs. It's a grow stage for me. So,
yeah. And that's okay. That's how I was too. And I mean, everybody has their way. I mean, you could stay with growth stages, growth stages. I was looking at my face. I was like, God, that's so gross. growth stages are fine. It's just so hard to know that you're talking about the same one.
Yep.
Especially when the plant gets, you know, over shoulder height, you know. Not everybody can cut the stalk down and figure out the growth stage. And, you know, you'll lose that flag leaf. Some people count it. Some people don't. I mean, we've seen that. We've seen people hold up corn plants and say, hey, what's the growth stage of this? And 15 people have 15 different answers.
Right.
Well, that's so, why a GDU. Yeah.
No, that makes total sense. And I'm trying to learn that and get it ingrained in my head. So the spring is, you know, 100 pounds of nitrogen, roughly 105, I think, if you take the sulfur credit in there. So then I got sulfur, and then I got 5 pounds of zinc, actual. And then I did another 20 pounds of potassium. Just after hearing everything this winter, I'm like, I'm just going to go throw some potassium out there so it's right there. and maybe it'll help my situation. Not a lot, but just enough to help it, hopefully. Uh-huh. If it doesn't rain, doesn't matter.
What are your soil CECs? What do you average, just for so the listeners?
Right around 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think same. It's 19.57 if I go by my soil test, I think, if I remember right.
Okay. I don't know. I mean, I was looking yesterday. I have some soil test areas that were 36 CEC.
Really? I don't think I have anything that high.
And I have some, you know, down in the 13, 14 range. So the home farm is where we see a lot of the higher CECs, especially there's like a 10 acre spot where the our organic matter is like 8.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I average like 3.45, I think, is what it is, or 4.7.
And that's where we are too, but it just depends on the farm and
right
everything. And the funny thing is that farm been plowed its whole life except for, you know, maybe the last 10 years, and it was still disc ripped when it wasn't really plowed. But
so it's got, you don't have a stratification issue is what you're telling me.
Yeah. Well, in spots. Yeah. And spots. And then there's hilltops and, you know, where the soil isn't black anymore and it'll be more of a clay top. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of water holding capacity, but I have often wondered some of those high CEC spots, if I should just not even fertilize, just plant into it and see what happens. You know, I mean, even if it's just a 80 foot strip or something through the middle of it or whatever, I mean, it'd be nice to know.
It would be interesting. And when you hear about, you know, we had Bodie on about BW Fusion talking about, you know, not putting dry fertilizer, you know, maybe, I'm intrigued. I'm not there yet, but I'm intrigued on how that's going to work in the future.
Yeah. There's, you know, ways there, you know, you have different soil tests, Haney soil tests, whatever it might be, to find out what you have in your soil. And we know we have way more of everything. It's just not available. And it's, you know, get the soil working for you to get everything available.
I think that's what we're learning as we go through this. I mean, even Total Acre, you know, we've learned a lot, but just having some of this one-on-one for the podcast with these really smart people, I've learned more there than I can pick up at a meeting. I think it's because it's a one-on-one session instead of taking a whole ton of information with 10 speakers in a day and try to keep it all straight than it is an hour or 45 minutes just talking to one person. I don't know about yourself, but that's what I've kind of found.
Well, and you have to, I mean, to kind of stick up for those groups, it's hard to have a new member come in on day X and here we've been here for 3 years. You know, what do you talk about? Because the guy that is there in his first time, he doesn't know anything we've been talking about for 3 years. So where do you start? Where do you end? You know, and I mean, he's either going to drink from a fire hose or the 3-year-old or 2-year-old members are going to be sick and tired of hearing the same crap all the time. So it's so hard for them to figure out where to start and end with the meetings. So,
no, I totally agree with you. Cause my first meeting in Total Acre was in, Phoenix or outside of Phoenix, Maricopa or whatever. And it was like drinking through a fire hose and everybody else. I mean, I remember sitting in the one session, I was taking pictures of the slides and I think it was Randy Dowdy. He goes, I don't know why everybody's got their phone out taking pictures because this is stuff we've been talking about. I'm like, I'm brand new, dude. I just click. I've never seen this before. And
yep.
So.
Yeah. The very first meeting I went to, I had pages of notes and lucky for me, it was third year it had started or whatever. So, I mean, it was a lot of repeated information, but a lot of planter setup stuff. Yeah. I mean, that planter is so important. And I'm going to tell everybody, I'm not going to go list by list of what you should do to your planter, but years like this, when you're worried about drought and cheap commodity prices, there's so much to be gained in bushels just from your planter. I mean, you have to do it right. Right, Andrew? I mean,
yeah, it's the most important pass.
When corn isn't $7 or $8 and beans aren't $15 to $17 a bushel, mm-hmm. you got to do it right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And people should know that. And if you don't, we're telling you, you need to dial things down. You need to make sure if you're going to have to spend another $5,000-$10,000 on your planter this spring, hurry up and do it, because there's no better time to do it, because you're going to get that money back in 1 year easily.
I totally agree. That's that is one of the best return on investments is the planter. And we've talked about it personally back and forth. You know, I did the precision stuff because I like the modeling and their thought process. For me, it didn't work just because of issues. I mean, technical issues, it wouldn't work. I'd sat a lot, you know, so it was very frustrating. But I don't have as technically advanced of a planner as I had with all the precision stuff, but I'm going to build it up to be similar. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to spend money today, I mean, that's one of the areas that I'm looking at. You know, if I have a good harvest this fall, I'm going to put a little more money back in that planter and some hydraulic downforce that I had, you know, before, because I missed that part. But that planter is so dang important. And I remember telling my banker when I started farming myself, I said, I'm going to spend extra money on, I said, my most expensive piece of equipment is going to be my planter. Because if you don't get it in the right space, you know, the right spacing, right spot, it doesn't matter what else you do. Because it's just that important. And then when I go to Total Acre meetings and stuff with you, it's planter setup, planter setup, planter setup.
Yeah. That's the first thing that you need to learn when it comes to ROI. Fertility is important, but do good with what you have right now.
Yeah.
Right. And exactly. You talking about your planter, you don't have to have the greatest, newest stuff. No, just, I mean, if bushings are wore out, if, you know, things are loose, if, you know, you're not getting a clean furrow when you're planting, I mean, there's so much to it. And if you're on YouTube, you know, the background we have here is a picture that's after I had planted, and the emergence from this picture was spot on. It was all, everything was up within 24 hours in this spot. Of course, it didn't get any rain and, you know, a couple other issues, but everything came up. It was very uniform, but Mother Nature was kind of a bitch.
she has the final say on some of the stuff. So, all right. So we're talking planter passes, I guess. So, all right. We've talked seed, right? See, all right, so you are planting
Pioneer,
DeKalb,
and Wiffles this year.
Wiffles, okay. Yep. What maturity ranges are you?
I first want to say all the beans are Pioneer. So back to corn, that's those three companies, and maturity anywhere from 100 day to 114. So pretty wide.
Very wide, yes. What population do you plan at? Do you do straight planting? Do you do prescription planting?
I will variable rate prescription. I will have enough, especially on the farms. You know, we've farmed for how many years. I got enough data there. But some of that data can, you know, you got to go through it yourself and change some things, because some of that past data might have been from an area that wasn't tiled. You know, and now you have it tiled and it's not as wet.
Right.
It could have, some of those spots might have been from fertility issues, and you fix that. So that might have changed things. So sometimes it's okay just to run one rate across the field and you know, get things figured out. But my population varies anywhere from 26,000 to 36,000. But 36, I don't always have the best luck with. So 30, 34 and 30 are very, like, that's 30 is right in the wheelhouse. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and you know, and until you're growing 300 bushel corn with 30,000 plants, I mean, is there a lot of reason to be planting more?
That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that. I think every year is different. It all depends on growing season, heat in the canopy, everything else. Now, I am a stronger on the population side, corn on corn. I just feel like I lose some just because of the residue that is there. Mm-hmm. Now, I do not do variable rate planting. I probably should. I just can't bring myself to do it. And that's just a mental block for myself, because I will adjust it to do strips, you know, of, so my base population is 36,000, but I'll go up to 44 and I'll go down to 28. And every year, or the last couple of years, since I've been for myself, I leave myself a check. My 36,000 across multiple soil types, it's my sweet spot for my management style, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like some 44,000 that I planted last year. It looked phenomenal until we got that late August heat. That killed it. I mean, the ears around, I mean, on the kernels, for rows around on that kernel, I lost probably 6 rows around to where they just swelled up, or just dried up to nothing on the top of, not so much the top of the ear, but like kind of in the middle. I don't know how to explain it, but you just see that they weren't nice full kernels. So 36,000 is what I'm going for straight through for the most part, other than I'm going to do a couple more trials of 44,000.
So you obviously have the fertility to go high and pop. A lot of people, it doesn't sink in, and maybe I'm dumb by saying this because everybody else already knows it. I don't know, but you know, if you don't have high fertility and you know it, don't plant a lot of plants, because it still comes down, you still have to feed so many. So if you got shit fertility and you're planting 36,000 out there because you do it on your home farm, that's your, you know, your baby farm, and you, let's say you just rent one that's been mined, well, that 36,000, if you don't have enough fertility to feed those plants, it's not going to do you any good. And that's why you see a lot of down corn and stuff and high pops. And it's not because of the corn necessarily, it's because of fertility issues, especially potash.
Yeah, and nutrient availability, like we talked about. You know, it's out there. We know it's there. It's just getting it into these plants. And that's something I'm still trying to learn is, you know, I know it's there, especially where I'm putting in the strip, planting right on top of it. I have plenty to grow 300 plus bushel corn.
Mm-hmm. And you know that because you have.
Right. Yep. And so that's where, I mean, I've seen higher, and that's where I'm like, okay, what are these spots? And we talked about Cassidy and soil tests and stuff. And that's where this DNA testing on the bacteria interests me, because I've got some spots that have consistently been like, you know, two widths wide of the corn head, and, you know, 60, 80 feet long, where I'm not fucking with the joystick or any of that shit, but it's, you know, just the best corn I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? It's not fertility, because I've pulled soil samples and the good, bad, you know, I'm talking, you know, 400 plus bushel corn versus 300 bushel corn to 250. I took 8 samples, you know, to figure it out. It's not fertility. It's something in the biology. And that's what, you know, guests like Cassidy and Bodie and stuff like that, and Joe, there's something that's there that I don't understand that I can unlock if I can figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I don't know, I kind of got off on a little tangent there, but
no, that's what this episode was about. I mean, we're just going to talk about everything. Trials is one way to start the conversation.
Right. So I guess the reason I got to 36,000 when I started was an app that I use for yield calculations at the end of the fall, or, you know, right before harvest.
Okay.
So I said that I could pretty much on average, I was having a 16 around by 38 long. Okay, that's my kernel average.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured out what the weight was on the average year, and I back calculated to get to 300 bushel, because that's my 5-year goal, was 300 bushel average across every acre. Mm-hmm. I'm going into year 4. So for me, it's 36,000 plants of 16 by 40 at the weight that I've been getting. Mm-hmm. So that's why I plant 36,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yeah. And I mean, if you keep improving your soil health, and sure, there's no reason why that should, and of course, Mother Nature, but there's no reason why that can't. I mean, that's a real goal. That's something that I'm sure you'll see.
We'll hit it someday. Yeah. But
no doubt about it, especially when you only farm 50 acres to begin with. Right. So
my 12 acres is just phenomenal.
Yeah, you got a lot of 12 acre fields, don't you?
Yeah, nope, not a single one. All right, so back to the planter. Sorry, tangent on population and shit there, but
yep, no.
What are you putting in furrow?
Whatever I need. So, and the reason I know what I need is because I've been pulling tissue samples the last 3 years, and I know, you know, each week I have these samples, and I know what the plant needs, or I'm 80% sure I know what the plant needs. Weather conditions change all of these tissue samples, but I have a pretty good outline of when and where it needs it. So my manganese and zinc, I struggle with that in season with corn and soybeans. So a quart of a 9% EDTA and manganese as well. And then I'm sorry, I'm having a brain fart here.
Zinc.
And then so zinc and manganese.
Yep.
And I'm going to run a fulvic this year. I'm more, not so much humic. I know that humics have fulvics in them, but I'm pushing more towards a fulvic only, because some discussions I've had with other high yield farmers, Kevin Kalb to be specific.
Exactly. Yeah.
Some of the high CEC soils I have aren't like thirsty for humics. The fulvic is probably where I need to be. So I'm going to use some Surge XD and furrow from Monty's this year. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do a moly, a molybdenum.
Yep.
That's why we just say moly.
Yep.
I'm going to do a trial of moly and furrow. I'm going to do a trial of calcium and furrow. I'm going to try a box of Pivot Bio treated corn seed. And of course, I got different talcs from Talc USA. My Pioneer dealer, Justin Abel, sells Talc USA products, which is a brand owned company now. And so they have different, you know, zinc treatments, whatever. I'm still in faith. I still like the actual zinc in furrow, the actual liquid. I know it's there. The talc treatments are tough because you don't know what kind of coverage you get. But that's kind of, and then I've talked a lot about Bright Yeti. So Bright Yeti is a big player in my, as far as seed treatments go. So that's kind of in furrow, I guess. So, going to do a lot of different trials with that, doing naked soybeans, naked with just inoculant on them, full treatment, doing in furrow with Ethos 3D, doing Radiate PGR in furrow, and then, you know, Bright Yeti versus non-Bright Yeti treated. We're going to send some seed in and test saturated cold germ before and after it's treated with Bright Yeti. One of the issues that Jacob, the CEO, has is he's just worried about, as long as it's ground shipped, you know, he really gets into, you know, the nitty gritty on how stuff is. He doesn't want you to treat seed and then like overnight it to like Sodak Labs to have it tested, because he's afraid that being in an airplane at a different altitude will change the, it'll compromise with the seed. He wants to take out all those, you know,
factors.
Yeah. So that was one thing that I'm going to try it, but he wants to try it more to where he's sitting outside of Sodak Labs in an enclosed trailer doing a treatment and walking it in there and doing it. That's what he wants to do. But
I wish he'd come down and just treat like a box for me or something, since he's going to have a mobile treater.
Well, he's working on it. He doesn't have it. Yeah. But
anyway, sorry.
No, go on. I was just going to ramble.
No, that's okay. So I do have a question for you, and you may not have this pulled up, and I'm cheating because I pulled mine up after we got talking about CECs earlier. What's your average zinc parts per million? Mm-hmm. You know?
Which soil test? So is it a DTPA or is it Malic 3?
I mean, is it fucking no, dude?
Well, it should say on top of it how it was tested. Sorry to put you on the spot.
Sorry, mine does not say that.
Hey, don't feel bad, because a lot of people,
I don't know. No, it doesn't.
Yes, they're getting, but a Malic 3 is going to show higher zinc and especially manganese levels.
What's the base for Midwest Lab? What do they normally do?
And that, well, that's where I get theirs would be Bray. So Bray. DTPA tested.
Okay. And that would be higher or lower?
Lower. So you're probably looking at what, 15s and 20s for manganese. What did you ask about? Zinc?
Zinc, yeah.
So it's probably really shitty, like 5 or 10?
Mine's like 2.4.
Yeah, okay. So you'll show like 15s with a Malic, okay, with that same soil. So that's why I asked, what test is it?
No, that's a great question. I didn't know that. And so, see, you just teach me something every time we talk.
Yeah, so in with manganese, same. I mean, you'll see maybe 10 or 20 parts per million in a Bray test, and in a Malic 3, I'm seeing 60s and 70s.
Okay.
So that's why it's nice to know what is in your soil, but there's so many different soil tests, and Haney is the only one that actually uses water.
Okay.
Test. All the other companies use a chemical or acids. And until it starts acid raining, what good is an acid test going to do to know what our plant can uptake, you know, if it's not tested with water? So
that's an excellent thing. I've never thought about it that way. So,
yeah. So that's why tissue samples are so important. We have a baseline in our soil. We know the good spots and the bad spots, but
right.
Tissues, you know, is actually what's getting into the plant. So that's where you need to start focusing more on them. And I know you are starting to, so yep. I'm not like calling you out or anything, but
I felt so called out because, you know, I only did 3 tissue tests on one field last year and it bit my ass.
And I'm an asshole. I just like want to make everybody feel like total dog shit.
No, I just, you know, the minimum requirement for total acre was 2 fields, and I did 4, right? 3 fields, 2 spots every week. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my best yielding field, I only did 3 times. So, but,
you know, just doing one field is okay also, because as long as you're doing those applications, like, you know, test a spot that you're not doing applications on and test a spot you are, even if it's in the same field, you're still getting a baseline of what your applications are as far as moving the needle.
That I totally agree. And that's why I did just 3 samples.
Yep.
So I basically went out, we can talk about this later, but I went out and I did 1 pre-fungicide pass to see what my levels were, what I was lacking, since I was going to have a ground rig come do it. And then I ordered what I needed and then applied it with my fungicide. And then I checked the tissue samples the next 2 weeks after application to see how much it moved it and how long it stayed in the plant. So that's why, I mean, but on my other fields, and of course I was doing it every week after that still too, but I just wanted to see across multiple fields that had different testing, you know, just 1 week of testing prior to application. I wanted to see what the movement was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
It is. Learn.
And it's nice to know too, like you, and you know, companies don't put this on the label. It'd be great if they did, but how, you know, how can they, they're just too much.
Either.
There's too much noise. Yeah. In the testing, but wouldn't it be nice if you knew, like I applied 1 quart of zinc and it bumped it this much on my tissue levels.
Right.
You know, so then, you know, next time, you know, well, that probably needs high. I only need a point or a pint. Well, or I needed 2 quarts because I hardly moved it.
Right. And it probably needs to be percentage based because it all depends on what's in the plant before and how much it moved it. Cause you know, but so in furrow, I know you're doing a Stoller one too. Cause I'm
bringing you. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Cause I actually had, yeah, I apologize. I had, down here another list that I wasn't looking at, but yeah, Stoller was on that, and that's where I brought up Radiate then later on too, because yep. I was going to do that,
compare those two, and I'm interested to see what you see between those as well.
Yeah, and PGRs, they're touchy. I've heard some negative things from people, and I've heard a lot of positive things, but it's, let's say I've heard 5% negative and 95% mm-hmm. positive, but it can screw things up too. So you have to be careful with PGRs. And how does a company know, you know, they say 2 ounces, 4 ounces, 1 ounce, how do they know what my plant needs? I mean,
I think that they do different testing to figure out what they have the best response from.
Mm-hmm.
I think
on an average scale, yes.
Yeah. Right. And that's where, like, Stoller, when Jeff was helping me on that stuff last year. So he goes, for your normal acres, do 4 ounces, but if you're pushing it, do 8.
Okay.
So that's why I'm 8 and 8. But I don't know. So in furrow for myself, or do you have anything else you do on the planter pass?
No, you can go on with yours.
Okay. So I'll do riser as my starter.
Yep. From Nutrient. Oh yeah. Their hat on today too.
I do. Yeah.
Nutrient. Yep. Loveland. Yep.
Yeah. And then, Zyway, I do a half rate. And so that goes right in there. And
what is a half rate? I don't
use eight ounce. It's like 15.7, and okay. I use basically 8.
Yeah, easier to measure.
Yep. So half rate there, and then accomplish max at a quart.
Mm-hmm. I've used that in the past. That's showed good results. Yep. Go on. Sorry.
No, Stoller, the BioForge at 8 ounces, and then their Stimulate Plus. Stimulate Fortified Plus or whatever, that at the 8 ounces.
BioForge is their PGR, right? Just for people that don't know.
Yes. No, the BioForge is a stress mitigator.
Okay, that's
the Stimulate's the PGR. But
okay.
Yep, and I know you use Ethos. I tried it once and it plugged all my filters, so I still have a bad taste in my mouth from that one. But
Well, I have the 3D system, so
totally different setups, and I totally get it. So, yes. I'm thinking about putting insecticide in. I'm all Pioneer, I'm Pioneer, DeKalb, and a little bit of Wiffles. Wiffles did well on my plot this year, so I gave them 12 bags. So I bought 12 bags from them, and they gave me 2 different numbers. So I'll put them against Pioneer and put them against DeKalb. So. That's, and then I'm also doing the trials of the stuff I bought from you and Joe, the Monies. So that's going to be AgriSweet, Calcium Plus, Zinc, and the Micro Pack. Is there anything else in that I'm, the Humic.
Humahance you were going to use.
Humahance that's in there. Yep. And then I've got some Mutiny products, the liquid chicken litter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We haven't got to Y drop stuff yet.
Yep. So this is, I'm putting in furrow at a gallon to the acre.
Okay.
And I have to take the calcium out when I do that, or I will probably have a shit show.
Cause there's phosphorus in the liquid litter.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then I have some hopper throttle with ether from them.
Okay.
But I'm going to still do the tests, but from everything I've heard, if I do in furrow, I probably don't need the hopper throttle.
Okay.
So.
What a cool name. And then add ether to it.
Yeah.
Like ether. Hopper throttle. And then
cold start your corn, man.
Shit.
I like it.
Yeah. Great marketing there, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I like it. I still think I'm going to make up my own. I told Patrick down there at me, I'm a dealer from Muni, so I should disclose that. But
yep.
I said, I want to make my own blend. I said, I have these different things. He goes, oh, we can do that. I said, I want to call it Andrew's BDEC, Big Dick Energy for Corn.
I knew it had something to do with a dick.
Yeah, just for entertainment value, so. But I said, there's your marketing thing. So we had a good laugh over that deal. But what the hell was that?
I'm just trying out different buttons. Since we don't have a guest on, I'm just going to play around with the mixing board here a little.
Gotcha. All right. So I'm done with my in-furrow pass on that deal. All right. Go ahead. What do you do in season?
I don't have any weeds in my field, so I don't apply any herbicide.
Oh, Jesus. I would lie if I could tell you.
Oh, go ahead.
I would lie if I told you I knew what I was going to use for herbicide, because I don't know. My brother Ryan sprays for me, and I basically just do whatever they do, so it's easy for him. Yeah. When he goes by, just spray it. Whatever you're – and they do – I mean, they have a great program themselves, so I don't have to worry about it.
Well, we can skip herbicide, but mine includes acetachlorine, atrazine, and then I also use Callisto.
Yep.
A mesotrione, I should say, if in case you want to use a generic, but and then Roundup or glyphosate. I use that to help kill anything that's already up. Since it is strip till, I have stuff growing by the time I plant, and I do a one pass, so I get by on my corn. Soybeans, okay. A little bit different this year. I'm actually going to take out my pre. Not sure if I should yet, but I'm worried about moisture. I'm worried about putting a pre down, not getting any rain, wasting my money. So what I'm thinking is two passes of Liberty.
Okay.
And Liberty's really cheap this year.
Oh.
That's why I'm going Liberty. Like nice. Half the price of Enlist.
Oh, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Real cheap. Well, so, it is for me anyway, because I have my chemical dealer license. Right. for me, it's cheap.
Yeah. Makes sense. I'm a two-pass, cover crops, so he's got to get out there and spray early. And then come back.
Let's talk about cover crop. I'm going to interrupt you a second. What do you think of that this year going into a dry spring? Are you, and then a spring where it's like, it's growing right now. Like for one, it's warm and it normally wouldn't be actually growing and putting height on right now. I know we still get cold nights that kind of slow it down, but it's still grass. So it's, as long as it's green, it's growing, which is great for microbiome soil. Soil biology, but you know, it's using up the moisture you do have, you know, and they're talking a wet April. So it might be great and perfect, but do you plan on killing this sooner than what? Yeah. Okay.
15 days before I plant minimum is the goal. I can't say that always happens. I am terrified of cover crops this spring, to be honest with you.
You need the heat for, I mean,
you need the heat to kill it. Yeah, that doesn't bother me because I strip tilled again this spring. So I've freshened up the strip. anything that was in that strip should be dead because I just did a tillage pass in that seed zone, my mind, okay? Probably wrong thinking, but this is my thinking. So that's why I did the spring strips to also take out any cover crops that are next to where my seed's going to be. Mm-hmm. My fear is I flew this on last August or whenever it was, September.
Your fear is flying?
No. Oh. The cover crop. Flew it on. I don't have a fear of flying. Flew it on. It didn't rain.
Okay.
I would say 90% of the shit didn't germinate.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that was a waste, but I get it.
Well, maybe.
It's still there?
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. We're going to get rain in April. Going to have it killed to plant. Mm-hmm. And all this freaking cover crop's going to come up late. And I'm going to be fighting it, you know, through, you know, what, 400 GDUs to that first post pass. I am terrified of that, to be honest with you.
I have volunteer coming up from last year that was killed. And it's coming up right now. Patches out in the field.
Makes me nervous, but I can't do anything about it. So
I chose last fall not to do cover crop. I have a contract with the NRCS, and I told them, nope, I'm not doing it this year. Mm-hmm. And for one, I was going to be late getting it out there in the dry, so I knew nothing was going to be, you know, growing. Yeah. And I was just worried about a dry spring because last year, not being as dry in the spring planting, I had a good 5 to 6 bushel, and thank God it was only a 10-acre spot in my field that it was a trial, but on my soybeans, they were about 5 bushel less in that area, and they were short. They never 15-inch, never filled the rows. They're just, yeah.
You're making me even more nervous since I don't have any beans and it's going to be corn, but.
Yeah, and I got nothing bad about cover crops.
I don't either.
It's a thing in northern Iowa that is just so, well, for one, it's controversial because people love it or hate it, but yep. I'm right in the middle. I love it when you got a perfect growing season and everything's right, but I hate it like for something like right now.
No, I agree with you. And I mean, I love the soil health aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it makes me nervous because I haven't done it in the corn on corn. I'm worried about how much nitrogen I'm tying up due to the carbon nitrogen ratio, you know, with the corn on corn already. And now I'm cover cropping it. So I am nervous. And so if I have a dip in yields this year, I'm going to attribute it to some of that, to this management that I needed probably some liquid nitrogen or something early. I don't know. So anyway,
the only problem I had with cover crops last year was when I planted and they were still green. I planted into green, but it was very sporadic. It was not a good cover. But where it was thick, when I came back in and terminated, that cover crop laid over my rows and smothered out areas.
Yep. And that's what I'm worried about, late emergence for the cover crop. So I hear you. All right. So are you doing any?
Quit talking about that.
No, that's all right. No, I have no problem talking about it. It's a fear. But all right. So we're in a herbicide pass. We got a herbicide in, whatever we're going to, I mean, you know what you're using. I have no fucking clue. Last year it was Duoflex and Keystone, I think. But all right. So what else are you putting in that mix?
The herbicide mix?
Yeah, are you putting PGRs? Are you doing nothing else?
No. So if it's a post pass, I'm going to put in a humic. So I'll put in 1/2 gallon of liquid carbon just to help soften the salt load of the herbicide. Corn, yes, I am putting something in because it's a one pass before the corn is up. And that'll be getting 1 gallon of humic. It'll also be getting trials of a product called Residone from Brandt, which is, what's it called? through Meristem. Same thing.
Excavator.
Yep.
Yeah. And landmine if you go through Mutiny.
Landmine. Yeah. So it's all the same. Brandt's does have like two other things in it. It really does. But needless to say, they're both 12.8 ounces the acre. And that I'm using to help break down residue.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have that Holganix product. I'm sorry, Holganix. I don't remember the name of it. But I have that for a breakdown trial as well for 125 acres. And then just the liquid carbon on its own just to see. But that otherwise, when I'm spraying herbicide, I only spray herbicide. And the only reason I put that liquid carbon in is just to soften the salt.
The salt blue. Yep. Yeah. Because you can wide drop and I don't. So that's a little bit of the difference. But
yeah, and having my own sprayer, I can go out any day, any as many times as I want. You don't have that luxury. You still have to, I mean, I have to pay for it too.
Right. No, I just don't have access to it. But so in my herbicide pass, I'm going to put a half gallon of Satisfied for Mutiny because I used it last year on my folio or on my fungicide pass. Saw huge results for the next 2 weeks in all my tissue samples in all my micros. So doing that, and then I'm going to do half a gallon of manganese 6, I think is what it is. And so I'll do that with my herbicide pass. That Satisfied has some humic and fulvic in it as well. So that's where I'm getting my humic and fulvic. And that is going to, I'm going to put that at that 400 GDU V3, V4 when my herbicide pass goes out to see if I can spark the plant into, I don't know, I had a lot of tillers last year, even though we were dry. To see if I can keep those a little bit longer and keep the plant micros up higher.
Yeah. So,
to be determined.
Yeah. Okay.
Now you're to white drop since I can't. So what do you?
Yeah. So I'm going to try a product called Zinc Grow 20. It was the cheapest zinc I could find, but it's non-chelated.
Oh.
So that's why I'm just doing a trial on it. At a half gallon, maybe a gallon. I don't know yet. I think my goal is 2 gallons of zinc on the season, but that'll be a trial as well. Liquid litter, I'm doing a 5 gallon trial. So I'm 5 gallons the acre of that.
That's getting after it.
Yep. On 50 acres. I think that was kind of their their high rate, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Gallons, yep. Yeah. And then I'm going to do a liquid carbon and hydrohume trial for humix at a gallon per acre. And then, of course, I put ATS in and boron with my Y drop. And, boron, yes, for sure. But the manganese, and I might add that as well, and the zinc, but that's all going to depend on tissue samples. I mean, I'm not just going to put it out there if I don't need it and if it's not raining.
Right.
But
and that's where mine is susceptible or, subject to change based on weather. But
absolutely.
And tissue samples. But
yep. And another product, and I just found out Monty's has a different KTS that they're running. It's a lower salt. But they do have a product called K28, which is a potassium acetate that I was going to try, but I might be going with that different KTS and just try to put some potash out there late, if, of course, weather depending.
Right. Yep. I'll be interested to see how that works for you because I struggle with K getting into the plant. So.
Mm-hmm. And as far as soybeans go, Smart KB from Brandt is the product they use, and that works great, foliar for soybeans. And Smart Trio I use as well. And then every pass on soybeans. Yeah, I keep forgetting because you don't have soybeans, so you don't bring them up. But yeah, so some of my foliar for soybeans would be there's a Fulltech product. from Spray Tech called Ultra Zinc. I'm going to try that instead of Smart KB and Smart Trio. I'm going to do that. But then the rest of my acres usually get Smart KB, and then I add Molly.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it? I gotta think it's the other way around. Well, anyway, every pass I add 3 to 4 ounces of molybdenum. Molly. Yep.
Molly.
It's only a couple bucks an acre, and yeah. So I put that out as well.
Well, we struggle getting it in the plant, so.
Yeah. And I'm just afraid that we don't have high enough levels that we think we need. Nobody really knows, but it seems like a lot of the high yield growers have high Molly levels in their plant. Yep.
And that's satisfied has the Molly too. That's why I use it. So,
mm-hmm.
But okay. So fungicide mass, is that where we're at now?
Yeah. So I plan on 2 for corn and soybeans. I use Miravis Neo.
Okay. And so do I.
Yep. And I'll use my GDUs again. So 800 and 1400.
Okay.
On corn, and then R1, R3 on beans, maybe R5.
Depending. I say that's the key.
Mm-hmm. I'm going out R5 on beans, mm-hmm. but I just don't know if there'll be fungicide in the mix or
Mother not. Nature will decide that one.
Yep.
I would agree. So, and I'll just do basically R1.5-2 on corn. I go out a little bit later because I put insecticide in for corn on corn because the male corn rootworms come out early, and like 10 days later, the females come out. So I'm trying to kill the females so I don't have as high a rootworm pressure the next year.
Yeah, when is it? Is it 800 GDU? We start seeing fireflies, and that's kind of when they talk.
You're probably right. I don't know. I'd be talking out my ass if I said, but that's what they kind of recommend, was just delaying my fungicide past. Since I have the Zyway in furrow, I have coverage, you know, to that point. And so I want to make sure I get those rootworms under control.
Yeah. And as far as my fungicide pass on corn, it 100% depends on that ear leaf. So as soon as that ear leaf's out, I'm going to hit it because that's what I want to protect, especially with tar spot, you know, being an issue. You got to hit that before it comes. And as soon as you see it, well, it's been active for 2 weeks in the plant. So you want to be ahead of it.
Yep.
So I'm all about protecting the ear leaf early on and then going from there, usually 21 days after with another pass.
Okay. And that is something that I'm looking at, and it'll be Mother Nature dependent. I did a second pass, you know, after tassel last year. I think the heat just kind of screwed up my data, to be honest with you. So I'll probably do another trial again this year with having a drone. So,
yeah.
Awesome. Well, and then we're going to go harvest all this corn and beans.
You see me, 300 bushel corn, 100 bushel beans.
Well, I mean, so let's talk about goals. What's your goals for this year? I mean, is it a spot of 300, a field of 300 on corn? Is it 90 bushel beans? Is it 100 bushel beans? What would you say is successful? I mean, positive ROI across every acre is the goal. I mean, right?
Yeah, but obviously my goal is to win the state for strip-till corn.
Okay.
I know that's your goal too.
Yep.
Someone's got to help me out with the whole soybean thing. How the hell do you get entered into a soybean contest in the state? You go to the soybean board page or whatever. It doesn't say jack about any contest. And if there is, they don't publicize it much, but I know all the states have a contest, but I don't know how the hell to get into a soybean contest. So I'll take any comments or if you got my number, call or text me. But so I've had 80 bushel bean fields. I've had 265 bushel corn fields. I guess anything above that. Always looking for that's always a goal to do better than you've done, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
I'm not looking for a 300 bushel overall cornfield because I have too many farms that are too variable,
right,
in soil types. So that's tough. Like I've said, that a 290 I got last year was on a field that averaged 206.
Right.
So that shows how variable that farm was. I mean, there was areas that were hardly 100 bushel out there because the lime rock is 3 feet down.
Yep. Exactly.
But that's, I'd say just to get back up in that 80 bushel bean area and, you know, have a cornfield that, you know, average 270s, that'd be great. And yep, all Mother Nature dependent.
Right.
You?
I'm still working towards my 5-year goal. I mean,
yeah, you want everything to be 300 bushel.
Acres. Yep. That's 300 bushel across every acre in 5 years. Now, some of it I haven't farmed 5 years, so by that time that goal's over, but that's the goal. For corn on corn in Southwest Iowa, I feel like that's a really tough goal to hit. I don't know if it's going to happen, but God dang it, I'm going to try. But I'm not doing it by just throwing out a shitload more money than everybody else.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to get the most positive ROI as efficient as I can. And I forgot to mention, I do a top dressing of nitrogen in season based off of the hell is it called? Smart Adapt In, where it basically takes your rainfall up to that amount, how much nitrogen you put out there, how much you've lost based on weather events. And then I variable rate that to my yield goal. And so I can't say how many pounds it is, but my ultimate goal with doing two strips this year was to get my nitrogen efficiency down to somewhere around 0.8 instead of 1. Or 1.05. Okay. So that's one of the goals I am looking at as well. Mother Nature dependent. I'm learning. Don't know if that's going to work. But, I mean, last year at my first field over 300, I think if Mother Nature cooperates, I can maybe get 2 or 3 there this year. Who knows? But those are the goals. Give me shit about it. I don't care. It is what it is.
Yeah, so you brought up nitrogen, and that is definitely one that I am not going to apply as much as I have in the past because I know I don't need it.
Right. That's where I'm at, too, and I don't know. I just, well, like I told you, I was doing strips here last week or, you know, this week, and they're like, what are you putting out there now? I'm like, my nitrogen. I didn't put any on in the fall. I know it was a beautiful fall to have everything done. But it is what it is. I'm going to try to do it on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Or cheaper, I guess.
Yeah. So, worst part is anhydrous is cheaper, but that's what I want to go away from. I don't want that anymore.
Well, nitrogen's so much cheaper this year than it was last year, too. And that's, you know, last year's when I started thinking, I'm like, I can do better with less nitrogen. Nitrogen isn't my limiting factor right now. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
So,
100%.
Well, we've rambled for a good hour and 3 minutes here. I don't know how much longer you want this episode to go, but we need to probably.
What's your corn maturity? Did we
say no? So my shortest is 110, and I've only got a few bags of that, so I can get started early. Most of it, other than those 12 bags or whatever it is of 110, is 100, and I have a new 113 day from Pioneer to 118 day.
Okay.
So that's kind of my yield range or my maturity range.
And you are just a little bit south and east of Omaha an hour.
Right. Yep. South 80, about 30 miles.
South 80, 30 miles. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Just so people know. And then I'm up by Charles City, Mason City area for anybody that knows where that's at.
So you're about 100 miles north of 80.
Yeah.
Probably. 125, basically, whatever.
Mm-hmm. 45 minutes from the Minnesota border.
Don't you know? You betcha.
Yeah, I know. I'm definitely a northerner, eh?
No, you're good. I give my wife shit about it. I mean, she's from she grew up a mile from Minnesota, And she doesn't have the accent, you know, but every once in a while you'll hear it. And I'll never forget, we were making, she was making toast one morning. I go, what are you doing? She goes, I'm making some toast. I'm like, what? she's like instantly knew that she's like, oh, I'm going to catch shit about this one. I said, oh, you're making some toast. You betcha. Don't you know? Get your boat out. So I had to give her some shit about that. But yeah. It is what it is. It's fun. We're all a little different. Everybody says or her parents say that we have a southern draw, you know, mm-hmm. here in southern Iowa. And I'm like, I don't know. mm-hmm. It's possible if you don't. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if you do, but I've noticed from other people for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So awesome.
And you're a big K-State fan, right? I love saying that. I don't know why. I just, because you're just down there, and the assumption, you know, could be a Nebraska fan too.
I'm not. I am an Iowa State fan, and I'm looking forward to them doing well in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. I don't know when we actually release this episode, but I'm hoping they get it.
23rd.
They'll hopefully play their first round game in the tournament, and they won. I'm afraid of a 2 seed from my childhood, high school, I guess, when they were a 2 seed and lost to Hampton.
Oh,
a 15.
Do you remember when they played Michigan State in the Elite Eight?
2000.
That was total bullshit game.
Yeah, Martin Cleaves, man.
But there were so many calls at the end of that game. I don't care who you're a fan of. I guarantee Michigan fans now will admit that some of those calls were total beat. That there was no way they were going to have Iowa State win that game.
No.
Nope. It had to be Michigan State.
Yep, and then they won the national championship.
Yep, and that was the national championship game right there. And a lot of people did say that, you know, the Michigan State fans, you know, they wouldn't admit that some of those calls at the end of that game were total BS, but a lot of them did say that that was the game. That was the national championship right there.
Yeah. I agree. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I remember I was in Cedar Rapids at college at Kirkwood then, and I remember watching the game with some buddies, and I'm like, if they pull this off, because they were leading at the time, I'm like, they pull this off, we're driving to Ames because it's going to be insane.
Yeah.
And then they lost, and then we just did what we normally did. Bullshit. So.
Yeah, I was in my parents' basement watching it with a buddy of mine. And, yeah, it was – I remember looking at his face, and he was holding back tears. And I wanted to, too. I mean, because it was just – it sucked.
It did. It was so bullshit. Yeah.
I don't remember what their seed was that year, but –
they were I don't remember. Were they a three or four? I don't know.
Marcus Fizer. That's all I
can remember. Yep. Well, Rick, our season. We're gonna call this because we're rambling now. So
yeah, sorry people if you didn't like this episode, but it is what it is.
Hopefully, you can say, "Hey, look at what these dumbasses are doing," and maybe try something or.
Yeah. And if
you know what, ask questions.
If you've listened this far and you've gotten this far in the podcast, tell people about the podcast.
Cause you're obviously listening to
the whole thing. Well, yeah, of course.
Thank you for listening. Yeah.
But yeah, Jordan Schubert, start liking and sharing. Cause I know you're listening to the whole thing. You talk about how he does. He had some good comment, and Elliot Henderson also, he had some nice things to say. He said, you know what, you're in my age group, you talk about things that our age farmers like to talk about, keep doing it. So we're just going to keep doing it. And obviously all podcasters know you don't make any money doing it, so just listen, make it worthwhile anyway.
Exactly. I look at it as we enjoy talking about it, so we might as well record it because there's other people out there doing it. Hopefully, they'll start giving us feedback on what they want to hear, you know. And we get to talk to some really cool people, smart people, to just learn ourselves, to be honest with you. I mean, it's just great, I think. So check us out on TikTok, Twitter, or X, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon, Prime, or Music, or whatever, everywhere podcasts. But thank you for listening.
Yeah, and you know what? We got some hats coming. So if you're a subscriber to anything, let us know. We'll send you a hat.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
I'll just start. Is that okay, Andrew?
Fuck yeah, man.
I paid for them.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
All right.
I'm a dork. Thanks for listening.
You're good.
Yep. Take care, everybody. Have a good one.
See ya.